Stay golden.
Hurricane.
And welcome back to the Golden Hurricast. We are usually sometimes recently kind of not really a weekly podcast covering Golden Hurricane athletics at the University of Tulsa. It's very good to be back. I am Ryan Token.
I'm Matt Rectine. Yeah, it's good to be back. I wish there was more fun things to talk about because it has been rough in terms of the sports that I think have actually been playing. And then the news out of like football, a sport that's not actively playing, has just been bizarre as well. I don't know if you want to dive straight into the basketball or if you want to talk something slightly more uplifting, if you have anything.
Man, I got nothing. I got nothing happy to talk. I'm in a good mood, just like being honest. I'm feeling good, but I don't have any good, like happy topics to talk about here. So I'm going to try to stay positive during all of this because, you know, I'm used to the men's team, obviously, at this point, not being great. The women's team, I'm still trying to figure out what the hell is going on over there. But still, you know, it's been like 3 weeks now of losses. So I'm more used to that now than I was a couple weeks ago. And football is, it's just a weird situation. So we'll get to that last. Yeah, let's start with men. Let's start with the men's side. It's bad as usual. Just some high level recaps here. 5-23 on the year, 1-16 in conference now. We are number 312 in KenPom, number 293 in BartTorvik.com, number 323 in the net, number 268 in the Massey ratings. Those have all gotta be program worsts. I can't imagine we've had a worse season than this. I remember way back, like a few weeks ago, there was a story in the Tulsa World that the record hadn't been this bad since like 1970 something, and we've only lost since then. Literally no wins since that article came out. So there, it's definitely, it's at least the worst season in 50 something years, potentially the worst season of all time for Tulsa basketball. If there's a worse one, I don't know about it, and please send me or send us some info.
Yeah, I'm going through the basketball reference, and the only one, let's see if that's even worse. Yeah, the only one that I spot quickly, like there's a couple back in the 40s where our win percentage is like zero. We went 0 for 10.
Ooh, yeah.
But there,
hey, we just did
one,
that the last 10 games.
I know. The big one that I can see in terms of like a lot of games played is 1948 to 49. We went 4-20 for a 167 win percentage versus our 179 this season.
Okay.
Yes.
1920 something? Is that what you said?
48.
1948. Okay.
Yeah. In terms of like modern Tulsa basketball, like, so if you look at the Nolan Richardson era as kind of like the cutoff, like we kind of talked about last year, I think the worst season would be 87, where we went 8-20. So
there you go. Not good, my man. We are 0-4, obviously, in quad one opportunities, 0-8 in quad two, 1-7 in quad three, 4-4 in quad four. Off the top of your head, do you know what that one win in quad three is, Matt?
Tulane.
Tulane. Best one of the year. They're a top 100 KenPom team. Honestly, I was kind of shocked that was a quad three. They're number 87 in KenPom. Let me actually look what they are in the net right now. They are number 94 in the net, so that explains it. A little bit lower in the net rankings. But that is our lone quad three win. All of our other wins are in the bottom quadrant of Division I men's college basketball. I took a cue from my guy, Gary Parrish, over on the CBS Sports Ion College Basketball Podcast. Shout out to that beautiful podcast. You can sort data over at BartTorvik.com. He talks about this often. You can sort it based on time, and it will re-rank the teams based on start date and end date and how they performed in that time span, right? Guess where Tulsa is in BartTorvik.com's rankings for the month of February. We are here at the last day. We're recording on Tuesday. It is February 28th, the last day of the month. We're taking just February here. Where do you think Tulsa is in the rankings? For context, there are 363 Division I men's basketball teams.
359.
Close. A little bit better. 355. 355th out of 363 Division I basketball teams in the month of February. For that month, we have pretty much lost almost every game by double digits. There's been one single digit game, unless I'm missing one, and that was East Carolina just a couple games ago. Everything else has been by an average of like 25 to 30 points. Pretty rough. It has not been good. Tulsa is in down bad. I mean, I don't know. This is just how it's going to go. I've got no anticipation of playing close. We've got one more game coming up. It's a road game. We're done with home games for the year. UCF was the last one. We can talk about that in a little. I know you watched it, Matt. But we've got one more game in the regular season, and then we go to the conference tournament, which we will preview next week. But the last remaining game on the schedule is a road game out South Florida, who actually has been doing pretty well here recently. So it's going to be tough. But anything else on that, I guess, before we move to actual like basketball performance stuff and recent games. So anything from you on just like where we're at in rankings this past month, anything like that you want to get to?
Yeah, I was just going to put some context. So KenPom has been a thing since the 2001-2002 season. And our lowest like final ranking prior to this year was 211 in 2006.
Ouch.
So this is like 100 places worse. Like I feel like I have to go back and listen to our basketball preview, because I said, you know, like I don't have expectations. I'm just gonna like sit and hopefully watch some good basketball, and there have been very few cases of that. Even with our 5 wins, I wouldn't say that all of those wins are necessarily good basketball. 312 is well beyond where I thought we could fall for this year, which is brutal. But I think it does make sense when you look at that February for context. Like, how many guys are actually playing that started the season as starters? Like, not a lot. We have seen a lot of turmoil. I don't know if turmoil is the right word so much as just like Conkle is changing things up. He is starting a lot of young guys, and I think that's probably the best way we could have handled, you know, this part of the season, is figure out what we got for next year, because, you know, we're not really playing for anything in terms of postseason or anything for this year. It's all a matter of what do we have next year at this point.
Okay, I got a couple follow-ups on that. One, the 5 wins, looking at where those teams are in KenPom. Tulane, top 100, number 87. None of the other wins are in the top 250 teams in college basketball. There's one in the 257.
That's close.
Yeah, that's the close one. That's why I put it at 250. That's Loyola Chicago. That was, when it happened, supposed to be a great win, because that's Loyola Chicago, the Ramblers. They are consistently in the NCAA tournament.
I will say that. It was at least a fun game to watch.
It was. It was a fun game. Some of them have been fun. Yeah,
like
not recently.
Doesn't mean as much as it.
Yeah,
we thought it was.
So 257, Loyola Chicago. All the other ones, the other 3 wins are in the 300s. So none of them are particularly great. So here's my question for you, Matt. Would Frank Haith have a better record at this point in the season / the end of the season than Eric Conkle does right now?
Yes, I think Frank Haith would have had more than 5 wins at this point in the season. I think you look at, I'm trying, like, let me just go through KenPom itself. You think about some of these higher scoring games, like that was the one thing Frank Haith did really well, is he kept these games lower scoring. And I think that would have given us the edge to get, you know, 5 more wins or something like that, which obviously is not very, like 10 wins, I don't know if I would care that much for 5 more wins compared to what we got, in terms of, I think it still would have been a downward shift from where we were even last year. So yeah, I think so. Especially Frank Haith would not have pulled all of his starters these last couple of games that I think we have.
I agree. I think Frank Haith would have a better record, primarily because this team is built around Frank Haith's style. He recruited most of these guys, you know, sans 2 or 3 of them. And that's what that team knows how to play. They know how to play, for the most part, that matchup zone. They know the system and how to keep it slow and low scoring. And honestly, keeping it low scoring is a crutch oftentimes for being the less talented team overall from a roster perspective. You have fewer possessions. If you can capitalize on those possessions, obviously you still have to capitalize more than the other team, but that matchup zone that Frank Haith threw out was always a problem for other teams. So I agree. I think Haith would probably have a better record. Does not mean I would feel better about the program right now, where Frank Haith still at the helm and we had 10 wins rather than Eric Conkle's 5. So I agree with that. On your other point, Conkle wouldn't have pulled those guys. You think he pulled them? I don't know. I was going to ask you this. Like, half of them are, you know, four of the scholarship players are sitting now. We're playing the rest of these games with like eight scholarship players on the roster. Sam Griffin, Anthony Pritchard, Keyshawn Embry-Simpson, Nikita Konstantinovsky. Those are the guys who've been out for the last several weeks now. My guess was not that they got pulled. My guess was maybe one of them, but the others, I think they are just not wanting to play, straight up don't want to play. I think that's what it is. And I wouldn't be surprised if all or most of those guys are gone next year and transferring, right? That's what it feels like to me. Like, they're unhappy with the situation. They have requested not to play the rest of the year. Maybe that's totally off base. That's my guess. I would be so surprised if Eric Conkle opted to pull Sam Griffin when we're sitting here at five wins, dying to get some momentum going into the end of the year. Regardless of if it matters or not, wins matter to try to like boost morale for your team and keep these guys from leaving. I think they already want to go. You know, some of them are already, you know, graduating, like Keyshawn Embry-Simpson and Nikita. They had their senior day. They're kind of out of here. But Sam Griffin has eligibility. Pritchard obviously has eligibility going into next year. Pritchard's a Tulsa guy. He'd be crushed if he left. And Sam's arguably our highest potential scorer. So it sucks for both those guys, but you think they got pulled, huh?
Well, I don't know if I would be comfortable putting a blanket statement that everybody that didn't play got pulled necessarily. You know, obviously maybe it's mutual, like you're talking about. There's, you know, if they're not wanting to play, then Conkle's not going to play them. So I think it's sounding like the only two guys that were on the bench were Konstantinovsky and Griffin on Sunday. Like, none of the others were there. Obviously, I don't know. Pritchard might be sick, right? I mean, people were talking about it could be like a long.
Yeah, they had initially sickness. Like Kelly Hines, I saw initially said out with an illness, but like it's been a month, you know. I mean, maybe it's something really bad, but if it was really bad, I think we would be hearing more about it. It's just it was an illness, and then it was just, where is Pritchard? No one knows. Yeah, no one's asking.
I don't know. I mean, that's so private university, like they can't just give out without Pritchard's like allowing them to do that if it's an illness. Like, if it's something like, I don't know, long term, that, I mean, there are illnesses that last months, you know, there's like long COVID kind of stuff. You've seen, there's some guys with the NHL, I think big name, Jonathan Toews, Blackhawks, lost like multiple months to it. Things like mono, like those are going to force you to sit out for a while, probably. That being said, like, I don't know, I feel like we would have heard more about it if there was something beyond the illness.
If it was an illness, the coach would be talking about it. There's no way that he's just, no, I don't know. I'm not in these press conferences. I don't know if the questions are straight up not being asked, and therefore we just don't know the information. But my guess is it started off as illness. The question kept being asked, and the answer became, we're just not talking about that right now. And if it was mono, like, players deal with mono all the time in college, and like, coaches are always very often straight up with that kind of stuff. And I would be so surprised if it was actually, I hope it is. That would be the best case scenario, because that means he's coming back next year and he looked better at the end of the season. So that'd be the best. I want that to happen, but I would bet heavily against that.
I guess we'll see. I mean, that's the thing. I mean,
we'll know pretty soon.
It's the problem with TU is like, we don't really know anything until something actually happens. Mm. Like, they're very good at not saying a lot, which is annoying when you're a podcaster reporting about them.
Yeah. Yep. It is true. Okay. Let's move on then. Talk a little bit of recap. I know you watched the UCF game, so maybe we can talk a little bit about that one. I watched the East Carolina game a couple weeks ago. That was just last week, I guess. Temple was somewhat close at the beginning and then really got away from us. So those are the most recent ones. How about we start with UCF? Maybe we can talk some East Carolina too, since that was an entertaining game. But let's start with you on UCF. Where you went to that game, right?
Yep. I was there for senior day. I guess they did the senior stuff at the beginning of the game, as opposed to, I thought they were going to do something at the end of the game. Maybe it kind of depends on if you think you're gonna win and if you're happy at the end versus at the start.
I think they usually do it at the beginning. I don't know, that's how I remember it.
Yeah, regardless, I showed up too late for that, unfortunately. But yeah, no, very low energy from the team in the first half. Like, I don't know what was happening. I'm just, you know, sitting there, obviously, like 19 minutes in, I'm like, whoa, we've scored like 14 points. And not even that, like they had only scored 28 or 26 at that point. And so it wasn't, it was like a very low scoring half on both sides, but it did not seem like a, what we would have expected last year from a Frank Haith. Like it was not artificially low scoring. We just, neither team was shooting well at all. I want to say we were like 17% from three at that point or something like that. And so, you know, we just don't have a lot of offensive firepower currently. And that's, you know, what we saw in the first half. And then in the, you look, you flip it to the second half of that game. And what did we do? Like 35 compared to the 14. Like, had we played that in the first half with that kind of intensity, with that kind of energy, you know, you're looking at a, obviously they scored what, 64, 68. So, you know, that becomes a very close game all of a sudden. And it's just, I feel like we came out playing better on the offensive side for sure in the second half. I think you saw a lot of guys kind of wake up, or at least, you know, start to hit shots. We, I think, still did a bad job of taking care of the ball. You know, we ended with 16 turnovers. There were a lot of just stupid plays. We could not handle the press very well. I mean, UCF was playing full court press pretty much, like, you look at that within 2 minutes of the game, and we were just struggling against that. And so, you know, not a super exciting level of basketball. What I expected, I mean, I figured we were going to lose by double digits, just because that's what we've seen the last couple of weeks. But I'll be honest, for a 5 and at the time 22 team playing their final home game of the season, it was still fun to go to the game. Like, and I think that speaks a lot to the atmosphere that they've kind of changed. You have this game last season, Reynolds Center is dead.
Yeah.
Like, there is nothing going on. Like, even at senior day last year, where we had that incredible, you know, game winner by Jariah Horn against UCF, and it was Fan Appreciation Day as well. Like, I feel like the energy in the arena was better this season than it was last. And so, I mean, I think that's good going forward. Just currently the basketball on the court is the least interesting part about what's going on at the Reynolds Center.
Yeah, totally agree. But you got to start somewhere. And we did start at least on improving something. Two sides to improve, right? And we got one of them and started, hopefully, on the other one by creating a new standard for this program. And it's hard to go down from here. Hopefully, if we do, that would be really bad. But hard to do it. I agree. Feels like energy is way better there. Even on TV, you can tell. Have the students been showing up to games still? Were there? I know a couple games they straight up have not. But like for the UCF game senior night, were there some students there or not really?
I could count the number of students on the stand with two hands,
Good.
And barely, like, yeah, needing to use a second hand. Okay. Unfortunately,
bummer. Yeah.
Yeah. So like the student section goes from that, and then I think it spills up a little bit to the side. And I feel like a lot of students kind of still sit up there because they can sit. So it's slightly misleading, but still. Yeah.
Yeah. That sucks. People got to stand. You're a student and you're at a basketball game. Stand for the game. It's not that hard. And like, I don't know, you got this whole platform to yourself. It seems like it should be easy to do. I know. I mean, when I was in college, I stood every game, the whole game. And like most of us did. It wasn't that weird. Yeah. I mean, I guess it's easier when you have more people there.
And we were consistently better.
That is true. We were definitely consistently better. But like, I'd still be doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was UCF. Tough game. I mean, you mentioned the 14 points in the first half. I think you had looked it up, I think, right? It was the lowest scoring half in how long? Like how many seasons?
I never got around to
okay.
checking any season beyond, like, surprisingly, only 4 points lower than our lowest in this season.
I remember,
We had a couple 18-point halves, one against Houston. I don't remember the second one. Might have also been against Houston. but, yeah, definitely lowest scoring half of our season for sure.
Yep. Gotcha. Okay, so that's UCF. One of the other games that is kind of, you know, at least a little bit of a positive, or there were positive aspects of the game, was East Carolina. just a week ago, February 21st, last Tuesday. And that game was pretty interesting. We actually came out looking really good, kind of a flip of this past game against UCF. Came out hot in the first half, shooting well, looking good, playing good defense, held East Carolina to 25 first half points. We were winning by 7 in the first half, and that was without Pritchard, Embry-Simpson, Sam Griffin, and Nikita Konstantinovsky. So all four of those guys out. We were winning by 11 at some point in the first half, and it looked good. And then what always happens is we go on an extremely long scoring drought that sometimes lasts 8 minutes like it did in this game. I don't know if we had that long of a drought in the first half against UCF. Wouldn't surprise me since we only scored 14 points. But 8 minute drought happened against ECU in either the third, like in the third quarter of the game, like the first 10 minutes of the second half, or the back half of the second half. And that's what kills you. And that's what's gotten us so many times this season. These big droughts where we just can't get the ball in the hoop. And that is because we're missing some of these scorers. Sam Griffin is a big time scorer. People are doubling Brian Salabange all game, every game now, because they know what he's about. And when he's taken away, our shooters are not in there for the most part. You know, we got Brandon Betson, who's playing pretty much 24/7 these games, but he's also kind of being shadowed all the time. And then outside of him, it's a struggle to shoot from three. Like, Tim Dalger is probably your best option after that. And then you got some freshmen in BB Knight and Josiah McWright who shoot them but don't make them very often. It's a struggle outside of those. So it was a good fight early against ECU, and then the wheels fell off the bus again in the second half, and we scored 8 points in the first 10 minutes of that second half, and that's not going to get it done. So that's how it went against the Pirates, dropped it to them, and that's how it went. So tough situation as usual once again, but there were bright spots in that game. We got to see some more Ari Seals the last couple weeks. He really wasn't playing at all up until the last probably three or four games. Hasn't played particularly well based on the numbers. I didn't really remember him being in there against East Carolina, but he played 20 minutes apparently. And I know he played some against UCF and then Temple before that. So he's getting in there. McWright and Knight, the two new freshmen that came with Conkle, they are playing a ton, especially McWright. He is playing hard. That guy plays hard. He is fun to watch. He's a little bit raw. He doesn't make that many shots, but man, he plays hard. And I really appreciate that, especially this late in the season. He's one of the few that feels like he's really giving it everything he's got still out there. So I appreciate that. BB Knight, I feel like, is the same way. But he's playing fewer minutes than I thought he would with all these guys out. He was playing some decent minutes even when the full team was there. And now when four of these guys are out, he's still playing like 20 minutes a game. And I thought he'd jump up to the 30s or something. But interesting from those guys. They're fun. I think they will turn into good players long term. They show some signs of being good players right now. They're just clearly freshmen playing a little bit in over their head in the American. But they'll get there. I mean, those guys, high energy, hard, good work ethic, as far as we can tell from comments from Conkle and everything like that. So I'm happy with them. Chukwu, the other freshman, was here, you know, before. The guy is just, he's still so raw, doesn't play that much. He played seven minutes against East Carolina, just 11 UCF, 12 against Temple. So he's not playing as much as I thought he would by the end of the season either. But I've got less promise, honestly, in my mind for Chukwu. Maybe he'll surprise me, but he doesn't look like an athletic player. I know he's big and strong. We need that. We need the rim protecting guy. And maybe that's what he'll turn into. And he doesn't need to be this athletic dude that I'm thinking of, but, man, sometimes it's tough to watch him out there, 'cause it feels like sometimes he doesn't really know what he's doing. All right. I just talked a lot there, Matt. You got anything else on basketball, or we could quickly preview South Florida?
Yeah, I don't know if there's a ton else to talk about, at least for the last couple of weeks. We kind of know. I think there'll be more, you know, after this week, after the conference tournament, when we kind of had a better look at the future. And I think that'll be a lot more exciting to talk about.
Yeah. And tournament dates, March 9th to 12th. So that's over a week from now. So we will do this next week and preview the AAC tournament. And that should be fun. You know, it's always fun to preview the tournament, and we'll see what we got there.
I wonder what seed we're going to be.
Yeah.
Counting on like 10.
10? Get that 10 seed? Yeah. Get to play the 7 in the first round or whatever. Could be nice. Yeah. No, we are. If you're not aware, listener, we are by ourselves in a canyon below everybody else in the American. We're 1-15 or whatever we are Let me scroll up and 1-16. And I think the second to last place team has five wins in conference. So it is not even close. Let me pull it up just to make sure I'm saying this right. SMU is second to last, who swept us, by the way, as most teams did. SMU is 5-11, and they are in 10th in the league. We are 1-16 in last, so not particularly close there.
Who is who's currently sixth in the standings?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I'll give you one guess. You got one shot.
Can I have any sort of...
Let's see if I can come up with a hint. They are 500 in the league. 8-8 is the record. Let's see. Have we talked about them in any way that I can give you a hint that wouldn't be super obvious? Probably not. Not that I can think of off the top of my head.
Just like Houston. Let me go. It's like Houston, Memphis, Tulane. I feel like so UCF.
Here's a hint for you. It's one of the three teams in the league that have two words in their name.
Okay. My original guess, and this solidifies it, was going to be Wichita State.
Correct. Wichita State. 8-8. 15-13 in the league. Why'd you ask about sixth?
Because the 11 seed plays the 6 seed in the first round. So if things stand, we would play them in the first round.
Yep. Makes sense. Cool. Okay. So yeah, we'll do the tournament preview next week. But for now, we'll talk briefly about our last regular season game. As mentioned at the top, that is on the road at South Florida. That is tomorrow, as of the time of recording here. March 1st, 6 p.m. Central on ESPN Plus. USF, they are number 138 in KenPom, number 151 in the net. Let me pull up their recent schedule. I have it in my head that they've actually been looking pretty good recently. Let me find them. I know they swept
their last four.
So they did what?
They've won three of their last four.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. And that makes sense. I had it in my head because they swept UCF and then followed that up with a win against, it looks like, SMU here. And there was some, you know, their middle of the season in conference play was pretty rough. And at least in our little Twitter sphere, the USF fans were once again banging on the Brian Gregory's got to go door. And here at the end, not that they've done particularly great, but they did sweep UCF, which is a huge deal, like the big rival, right? That's nice. And UCF is a good team. They're 63rd in KenPom. And they swept them. And so, like, that makes a difference. Whether it should or not, you know, I don't know. But all of a sudden, there's some, you know, dissonance between among fans on whether Brian Gregory should stay for another year since he's shown some promise here at the end. But anyway, South Florida, they're okay, you know, in terms of conference. They're definitely better than us. They have a really exciting point guard who is always fun to watch. Played at Memphis the last several years, Tyler Harris. He's from Memphis. Leads them in points, assists, and steals. He's a senior this year, so this is his... I thought it would be his last game, but no, they've actually, USF has two more games on the regular season schedule. So his second to last game, but his last home game. So last home one for him. Outside of him, he's definitely their game maker, right? He does everything for them. Outside of him, they are big and physical. Tyler Harris is a small dude. He's their point guard. A lot of other guys on their team, and kind of the reason that we got smacked by them in the first one by 30 or however much we lost by, is because they're big. All of them are big and strong. They've got a 7-foot center, junior, Russell Chiwa, put up 21 against us last game. Another one of their seniors, Keyshawn Bryant, big, long dude, really solid player. All of them across the board, generally, aside from Tyler Harris, who's my favorite player to watch, is a big physical team. They're just all big and strong, right? And that is not good. We are straight up not that. We have two guys, maybe three, who you could put in the big and long and strong category, and I'm thinking Celebange, Chukwu, and Tim Dalger. And pretty much nobody else is a combination of big, long, and strong, at least not that I can think of. So that's not a good matchup for us.
I was looking at our previous matchup, and I was like, well, we did out-rebound them. Like, we had 14 offensive rebounds, 19 defensive to their 7-25. And I was like, you know what? You know, like, blows my mind based on how you're talking about that. And then you look at the shooting percentage.
Yeah.
And South Florida shot 75% from two.
Oh my God.
I imagine because it's just a bunch of tall guys getting in the paint and just making those buckets. So yeah, you're not going to have a lot of rebounds when you're making three quarters of your shots.
Yep.
So that's kind of what
dang, dude. Oh my God. I forgot about that. Yeah, man. Yeah. Look at that and shooting 40, percentage. That is insane.
40% from three. Like, they're worst. They were like a worse free throw shooting team than they were 3-point.
Yeah. I mean, look at it. I mean, just so back on us for a half second and how not great we are at some things. There are 363 Division I men's basketball teams, as we say many times on this, unfortunately this season, because it's always in context of how close we are to that number. We are 361 in 2-point percentage defense. That is just letting guys get past you and or them just being bigger than you, and you have nothing you can do to stop them. And Eric Conkle talks a lot often about just like the fatigue of a game and needing, you know, especially against these bigger, stronger teams, you just got it. You're up against these guys all game, just getting bodied, and you can deal with that for chunks of a game. But over the span of 40 minutes, a team like us, we're small, we're not long, generally like not as athletic or strong. It just wears on you, right? And that's what happens here. These bigger, stronger teams just get to us, and we can't stop them at some point, and they just do whatever they want for long periods of time, and that you can't recover from that. That's what's happening. So we're 361 in 2-point percentage defense. We are 362 in block percentage. So the amount of times that we on defense block a shot is second worst in the entire country. And that makes sense. I can't even think of a time. Maybe a Chukwu block in there once or twice, but man, not often.
Yeah. Or I feel like Dalger gets like an athletic
Dalger
block every yep. now and then. I'm trying to think of like who else I would even think could get one.
Yeah, maybe like Sterling Gass and Chapman. I think I remember him getting a block or two, and he's a strong dude. He's just not big and tall.
Yeah, I'm trying to look if anybody besides Salabanga has had any recently. I'm going back to Houston, and it's still just him.
Damn.
Here's one. Here's Tim Dalger got two. So,
hey,
against Wichita State back.
He had a stretch. I don't know if like these last couple games he's been like playing as hard as he did, but there was a time, you know, like 3 weeks ago at least, you know, a time that I remember watching on TV where it was like obvious that Tim Dalger was the hardest one playing on the court across pretty much either team. The guy was diving for balls, huge dunks, big blocks, like several games in a row of this. And not gonna lie, haven't watched as closely for the last several TU men's basketball games, so I don't know if he's still playing that hard. Like I said, I watched the East Carolina game. I didn't notice that, like it didn't jump off the screen at me. But of the games that you've watched recently, Matt, have you seen anything like that from him, or is it also kind of been he's kind of taken a step back as well?
So I think part of it, I think he has been our most like high energy guy in general, but you know, the same way Conkle talks about 40 minutes is tough to, you know, keep that intensity up against a bigger team. I think you got to look at that in the scope of the whole season as well for Tim Dalger. It's like he's been such a high intensity player, I think, just for most of it. I would say probably across, you know, if you look at our entire roster, it's probably between him and Salabanga. And so it's a long season.
In terms of what?
Just in terms of like how hard they're playing and how much like you know, their pure athleticism or you know, just how hard they're working, kind of stuff like that. And so
I just recently, you know, since he's playing more, I would also throw Josiah McRide in there for the last like three or four games because that guy's playing his ass off. But for the whole season, yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And so I mean, I think that kind of, you know, maybe just doesn't agree with me. An example can't agree with me, but I don't know, like a fresh set of legs. He hasn't played as much, and all of a sudden, you know, Josiah McCrite is coming in and, you know, he's showing that intensity. And I think it's Dalger has been, his time has just increased over the course of the season. And especially, you know, with half the team currently out, it's hard to keep up that intensity for every game. And so, you know, I don't fault him. As like the entire team has kind of fallen to a new level in the last month.
Yep, that is the truth. All right, let's move it on to the women's side of things. Unfortunately, not much better news over there. 16-12 on the year now. What's up?
Blows my mind. I feel
it is so odd. You look at their, let me break down the schedule or like the high level stuff first, and we'll get into this. 16-12 overall. 6-9 in the American now, tied for 7th now. We'll expand on that later. 104 in the net, which honestly, not that much different than it was probably a month ago. Speaks to the parity of the league and these games that we're losing. 120 in Massey, though, that is definitely lower than it was a month ago. Here's what Matt's talking about here. We are 1-9. The women are 1-9 in their last 10 games and have lost 6 straight. Only one game left on the schedule. Fortunately, it's home against the second worst team in the league in UCF. But 1-9 in the last 10 games. We have dropped from number 2 in the league just a few weeks ago to 7th, tied for 7th with Wichita State. And it is not impossible that we finish 8th. I think it actually is impossible that we finish below 8th. With only one game left, unless other teams have more than one game left. If everybody only has one, then I think 8th is the lowest we can go. But that is just a crazy drop in the last couple weeks. 1-9 in the last 10 games, lost 6 straight. What is going on with this team, Matt?
I don't know, because if you'll remember our last episode, I was like, we've got two games. We had the SMU and the Tulane matchups, rematches, and I predicted the SMU one would be a closer game than the Tulane one, and that was not the case at all. You look at that, we lost to SMU by like 81-58 and then lost to Tulane by 2 at home, so very close. But then after that, you know, we kind of fell off. 84-68 against Wichita State, 69-44 against Memphis.
God,
played at South Florida pretty well, probably the best game we've played in this losing streak.
Yeah.
93-83 loss. And so South Florida, best team in the conference,
and Memphis second best. So like, yeah, losing to them is not bad, but losing to them by 25, not good. At home too, rough.
Yeah. And then the last most recent game this past Saturday was a 60-37 loss.
37 yeah, points for the women's team. What is the last time it was anywhere close to that? All the women's team does is shoot threes. What was our, let me pull up the box score.
Our lowest after that is 44, unfortunately, against that Memphis, you know, team that we just talked about.
But this is Houston. But yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So like 27% from three in this game. And that's how it has to, and 22% from the field. Oh my God. Rough.
Yeah, well, and it's our old friend that we've kind of talked about. It's yeah, turnovers.
And rebounds. Look at the rebound difference in this one.
Yeah. You look, we had 21 turnovers against Houston. We're out-rebounded by 21. They had 53 to our 32.
Yeah. 34 defensive rebounds and 19 offensive rebounds the Cougars had in this one. That is insane.
You look at that. You go back to the Memphis game. 23 turnovers to Memphis's 9.
Mm-hmm. And then what was that? Was SMU the other really bad turnover game?
The first SMU one.
The first one. Okay.
That one was 24.
Like 26 or something? Yeah.
Yeah, 24 there. And then you look at the second SMU game. We actually only had 17. But they doubled us up on rebounds. So if it's not one, it's the other. And that's kind of...
Or it's both.
Yeah. And so that's... our shooting dropped off in the last 10 games. I think our 3-point shooting and our overall, just like how good we were at shooting, was covering up some of these, not covering them up because we've talked about them pretty consistently throughout the season. You know, it's just like rebounds, turnovers are killing us. But we're winning because we shoot better. Like I go back to the East Carolina game back in late December, early January, where, you know, we won that one because we were actually able to shoot the basketball, whereas East Carolina could not hit the side of a wall. And now, you know, that's catching up to us. We're not shooting lights out. We're not shooting, you know, like the top team in the country like we did last season in the first half of the season. And so now those turnovers and those rebounds are just making everything else way worse than it has been. And that's tough because, you know, obviously it's just like, well, shoot better. Well, teams adjust as the season goes on. And I think as we're seeing, as, you know, these teams have played us once, or have seen a lot of our footage, you know, they're defending us better. They're not giving us those shots to take. And then we just don't really have another avenue for scoring right now, or a sustainable avenue. And so that's kind of what's just killed us.
Yeah. And I think it might, you know, this was kind of the case last year. You know, we started off 10-0 or whatever that beginning of the season run was. And then it fell off. You know, we got the conference play, really fell off. This year, it extended a little bit longer. We started off, you know, we didn't start off 10-0, but we started off hot, of course. Started off conference play like 4-0 or 5-0 in the league. We're tied for second in the conference early, and then it fell off. And I wonder, you know, the talking point last season was the strength of schedule was really bad, right? And that kind of bubbled us up early. It gave us kind of a buoy. And this season, it wasn't, it was better, but it wasn't hard, you know? And you look at these games, we are, here's the, let me make sure I'm looking at it. Yeah. We are 2-6 against the top 50 teams, 14-2, in the kind of their second quadrant there, which is pretty solid. That's where we are like really excelling. 2-10, versus top 100 teams though. And that is, that, I mean, it's not surprising because they're like, they're the better teams, but like top 100 is not, you know, insane. And a lot of the teams that we're playing in the league, like in the conference, the American lives in like the 80s and 90s, right? And we're losing all those games, like at least recently. And so it's weird. Like we can beat, and we're 11-0 in the bottom half there, of like the below 150 teams. And it just kind of looks like two seasons in a row, it looks similar, right? We have no problem putting away bad teams, and we play a lot of bad teams. We win those games. We don't really drop many of the bad teams, right? We don't usually have really bad losses, but we can't really get over the hump here for some reason of like crossing the ledge of playing these top 100 teams and playing them well and winning those games. For some reason, we get to the tougher stretch of the schedule and we can't get over the hump. And there's plenty of talent on this team. I don't know. I don't mean to say that to like put it on Angie Delp. I don't think it's on her or anything like that. I think she's doing a great job here. But it does feel like we have talent. Like Tamira Poindexter was a first team All-AAC player preseason. Maddie Biddle, I think, was also projected preseason first team. And Maya Mayberry was second team. I think we had another second teamer in there. And you've got other players like stepping up, like Delaney Crawford has had a huge season, especially down the back half of the year this season. So like the players are good. I don't know if it's, we play so fast and this is just how it goes. Like you go on a cold streak of shooting and you're just going to lose all these games sometimes. But I don't know, man, it is weird. I haven't watched them enough recently to have intelligent context about what's going on here. But it's just so bizarre that we started this year like 15-5 or whatever, and then we've lost the last 10 games. It is really strange. So I don't know what to take from that, but it's just bizarre looking at ESPN's win-loss thing here and seeing all the losses recently.
Yeah, and so I mean, as much as we're kind of like talking about the struggle, I do want to just say, you know, like the fact, you know, we're 16-12 going into one game left of the season and then the conference tournament. Like this is still amazing compared to where Tulsa was just 2 years ago. I think to turn it around and be, you know, like to not be losing those games that you shouldn't be losing, like that is the foundation of a good basketball team, or at least like what you should be doing. And like, obviously we're seeing that on the men's side is not, you know, the case. Well, we are the team that teams should be beating, unfortunately. And so, yeah, we still have a chance to be better than we were last year. Last year we finished off the season with 17 wins. If you count the, win over UNT in the NIT. So we have a chance to match that with this game on Wednesday, which is definitely winnable, playing against, you know, second worst team in the conference at home. It would definitely be good to get momentum for the conference tournament, which is now, you know, obviously looking less exciting than it was when we were in line for a first round bye.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's just the American has improved across the board. I think, like, you look back 5 years ago and the American was a single team. It was UConn just dominating everybody. And I think that kind of, like, I honestly think that kept the conference down as a whole. Because it's like, no, everybody, you know, like my thought is like, well, of course we're never going to win. Like, it's UConn. UConn's just going to run this town for as long as they want. And now they're gone. And I think you kind of saw South Florida had started to get good towards the last couple years that UConn was still in the conference. And so, you know, there was a good, they were able to step up. UCF, obviously, you know, like went on a run last year, lost their coach, and is now seeing, you know, the cost of success. But like you were saying, this conference lives in the 80s and 90s. That's like everybody is moving forward, which means, you know, like this is not going to be a conference that you can just take without building from the foundation up. And I think we're doing that. I think what we're seeing, especially how we're starting seasons, is good. We just need, I think, like to work on our obvious deficiencies. And I think next year is probably, you know, I think second year of recruiting is the tell of, you know, if the team is going to change. Because, you know, Nelp came in April before April of, what was that, 20? And then had her first full year with like none of her recruits, has one recruiting cycle, and is now getting a second so that we can see fully what her system is. And I think that's kind of like the next jump that I'm really expecting is like next year, these games or this second half slump that we've kind of seen 2 years in a row, that's when I'm expecting that to kind of like not happen, you know, like I be competitive, not just, you know, we're not going to, I don't think we're going to win every game in conference, but I think, you know, we're not going to have a terrible slide. And I, that's kind of like what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there. And we will lose like Maddie Biddle and Maya Mayberry next season. And those are two stalwarts of the women's team. You know, so those will be big losses. Of course, they both chose to come back for their extra year, which is why I was hoping this year would go better than last year and not quite the same, right? We kept a ton of the production from last year and added some pieces around them and are about the same in terms of overall record, right? Kaylin Levings, you know, she's kind of one of the bigger ones, right? She's supposed to be able to help out on the boards with the blocks. I don't know where she is. She didn't play against Houston. Have you heard anything about her? I know she got hurt earlier in the year, but she came back for a while. So I don't know if she's been out for several games now or what the situation is with her, but she did not play at all and was not listed on the bench either against Houston.
Yeah. So the last time she played was Cincinnati on February 1st. So I've got to imagine it's another injury. Cause I was there her first game back, which was Wichita State at the start of January. And so she played for about a month and then has been out again. And so, you know, I think that could be part of it is, or I would say that probably is part of it. You know, we lose her again and, you know, we're not able to rebound. We're not able to beat a lot of these teams in rebounding. Mm-hmm. And that sucks. And I mean, I hope that it's not a bad injury. I hope that she is able to come back, you know, for next season. But yeah, to not have that consistent piece that we thought we were going to have definitely hurts.
Yeah. And we also, it just popped back in my head because we were talking injuries. I know we also lost Jessica Evans for the whole year, like 3 weeks ago. You know, it's been a while. So like she's been out, Levings out. Maybe that's all there is to it. You know, you lose, Jessica Evans is a huge piece of this team. So you lose her. She was starting, like playing heavy minutes. You lose her. You lose Caitlin Levings with the size. That's going to have a big impact, right? So maybe that's all there is. Maybe we're overthinking it. Maybe there's not really a root problem here going on with like the scheme or anything like that. Maybe it's more unlucky. You lose two of your most important pieces on the team late in the year. It's not going to be easy for you to win those games. So maybe that's all it is.
Yeah, I will say with not having injuries at the guard position, we should not be turning it over as much. Like yeah, I am okay ceding some of the rebounding issue to losing some of our best big production. Mm-hmm. But in terms of turnovers, like...
Yep, that can't happen.
That's pretty bad. That's awful.
Yep, that is unequivocally true. There's no getting around I mean, probably for the last month, just based on the games we've talked about here, probably averaging around 20 turnovers a game. And you're not going to win games when you turn it over 20 times. It's just not going to happen. And that's tough. Yeah, good call.
Only 15 per game.
Okay, yeah, nice.
Which is still...
Oof, like, that's bad. Yep.
Kind of insane.
Yep. All right. Okay, well, let's move on to the future. We mentioned already we've got UCF coming up. That game is also tomorrow, so the men and the women. What time was the men's game? Is that 6:30? Do we have to play at the same time? No. Tomorrow the men play at 6 Central. The women play at 6:30 Central, so we've got some overlap there. Both of them on ESPN+. Obviously, the men are away. The women are at home. So if you want to go to the last home game of the year for the women, go check it out. I'm sure it'll be senior night for Maddie Biddle and Maya Mayberry. That'll be fun. So go check it, 6:30 Central. If you can't go, ESPN Plus. UCF, second worst team in the league according to the AAC standings. So that should hopefully be a nice win to close out the regular season.
Yeah, come say hi. I'll be there. I think it'll be a good, hopefully, momentum push towards postseason.
Definitely hope so. It was super fun last year. The NIT run last year was a freaking blast. So hopefully we can make that happen again. Or win the league. Go to the NCAA tournament. But talking about the AAC tourney, let's talk about that because that one is in pretty much less than a week, March 6th. What day is that? Is that next Monday?
Yep. Yeah, I think they do Monday through like Wednesday and then the men.
Yeah, I think the championship game is on Thursday and then the men start, I think, that same day. So March 6th to 9th for the women's tournament. They're both at Dickey's Arena in Fort Worth. But the women we'll talk about now because that episode may or may not be out by the time this tournament starts. So let's do it. USF. South Florida has already locked up the one seed. They are pretty much far and away, clearly the best team in the league. So they have that one locked. We, as we mentioned, have dropped from number two just a few weeks ago in the league to seventh, tied for seventh with Wichita. And it's pretty close between us and 10th. The top five teams in the American get byes in the first round. There is no chance that we can get into the top five. If we win and everybody else loses, we still wouldn't make it. To fifth. SMU is in fifth at 7-7. We are at 6-9 with one game left. There's no chance that we catch them, unfortunately. So we will not be getting a first round bye. Cincinnati has the number 11 seed locked, so the bottom seed in the tournament, 2-13. But where we land is still a little bit in flux. It's not going to be a bye, like I mentioned, but we could slip to eighth. I can't remember if we can get up to sixth or not. It doesn't really matter. Here's some of the scenarios. If the tournament started today and we were the seven seed, we would play most likely number 10 UCF, second to last in the league, in the first round. Second round game, if we can beat UCF, which would be two UCF games in a row, would be against whoever's number two, which is looking like Memphis.
Yeah, that worked for us last year. We had two Wichita State games in a row. So
is that how that went last year? Yeah, nice.
I don't know if that there might have been a UCF in between. I might just be getting wires crossed because men and women both played Wichita State.
Oh, yeah, that's probably right. Yep, good call. But here's some of the scenarios. So if we, for the rest of the season, if we win and Tulane loses, we'd be tied with Tulane in the conference and the overall record. But unfortunately, they have the season sweep over us, so we would still be number seven, even if we win and they lose. If we lose and Wichita State wins, they're the ones we're currently tied with, we would fall to the eight seed and play number nine in the first round, which would probably be Temple. And if we win that game, then we would play number one, who's going to be South Florida in the second round.
And you throw like another wrench in it. If we lose and Wichita State wins, that means UCF wins, which means they might jump Temple. And so we might just play UCF regardless.
That was my third and final scenario, which was if we lose, you're going to have to keep this one in your head. If we lose, Wichita State wins and Temple wins, and then that situation happens with UCF. Technically, I think if I did this right, we'd be tied with Temple for eighth or ninth, like for the eighth, ninth spot. But we only played them once this year and we beat them. So we would actually still have the better overall record than them and the season, like the conference record. So we would still be above them if that whole scenario played out. Over audio, you probably didn't follow much of that. There's a lot of scenarios still, even though there's only one game left. The bottom line, I think, to remember is that there's no way for us to get a first-round bye, which puts a serious hamper on the chances that we can win this league just statistically. No team who's not had the first-round bye has ever won the American on the men's or women's side. So that's a bummer for us. But how far we go, I don't know if an NIT bid is still in the cards. You know, we made it last year with probably about the same seed, so maybe it's a chance. But anyway, we'll see what happens. It looks like we're pretty much guaranteed, most likely, either the 7 or the 8 seed. And if that's the case, then we'll either play number 2 or number 9, or number 2, number 10 or number 9 in the first round.
So probably what I'm gathering is most likely we will either play Temple or UCF.
Yep. Yep. That sounds like the most likely. If we're the 7, and assuming things go as they are predicted to go, if we're the 7, we'll play UCF. If we're the 8, we'll play Temple. So yeah, we'll see. I mean, we can win both of those games, and then, you know, you knock off the 1 seed or the 2 seed in the second round game, you can go the distance. That's the game. That's the big one, right? So ideally, obviously, you got to take care of business in round 1. But round 2, assuming we can make it through that, that'll be a fun one, because, man, that's when the stakes are on, the cards are on the table, and you can take control of the league if you win that game. So definitely be fun. Conference tournaments, favorite time of year for basketball, barring the NCAA tournament, I guess, but not really, because Tulsa is so infrequently in the NCAA tournament this year. I more look forward to the conference tournaments, or these days. I more look forward to the conference tournaments. So I'm psyched. They're coming up this next week. It'll be time to really get into it. So I'm excited.
Yeah, and I was going to, like, so the number 1 seed, UCF, not unbeatable, I think.
USF.
USF, sorry, yeah. Too many Fs. We have played them close, like, so 10-point loss earlier, just last week. The first matchup this season was not as close, but, like, last year we played them pretty close, almost beat them on the road. So, yeah, I would say it's not, if we play our best game, we could knock South Florida off. So I think there's a lot to be excited about. Definitely worth watching.
Agreed. Okay. So that tournament will probably start before our next episode. So we will be watching that with you, tweeting along with it, I'm sure. But let's move on for now, and we'll do the men's tournament preview, as we mentioned, before that tournament starts on next Thursday, the 9th. Okay, so let's do some around the American on the men's side here. Just look what's been happening in the league recently. It hasn't been too surprising. There haven't been any really big, crazy things happen for the most part in the last couple weeks. Houston, unsurprisingly, still chilling up there at number 1 in basically every possible ranking, or at least every ranking I could find. They are currently number 1 in KenPom, the Net, BartTorvik.com, the Massey rankings. And those are the ones I check the most. So they are number 1 in all of them, which makes sense. And they dropped a little bit after their loss to Temple a month or two ago, but they have climbed their way back up and solidified themselves up there. Memphis is number 38 in KenPom. That is good for second best in the league. UCF, Cincy, and Tulane are the other schools from the American that are in the top 100 in KenPom right now. UCF is number 63. Cincinnati right behind them at 66, and Tulane sitting there at number 87. It's weird. UCF is the third best team in the American in KenPom rankings. I just mentioned they're 63rd after Houston and Memphis. But guess where they are at in the league standings, Matt? They're 63rd in KenPom, third best in the league. Where are they at in the standings?
Fifth.
Seventh.
Damn.
Bizarre. It is weird. They got swept by South Florida, which we talked about before. And they've dropped some other weird games every now and then. I know I've said many times on the show that I think Johnny Dawkins is a good coach. I think he does a good job. But man, UCF fans, despite being 63rd in KenPom, they are ready to ditch him going into the Big 12. They don't think he's the man for the job, which maybe is true. Big 12, if you're coming in 7th in the American, you're not going to be coming in 7th in the Big 12. That's for sure. That league is freaking amazing. So I see where they're coming from, switching leagues and wanting to move on your guy, especially after being 7th in the standings in the American right now. But I don't know. I think he's a good coach, but maybe he's just not enough, especially not enough for the Big 12. So I could see that happening, but that'd be a bummer. I like him. Just in terms of total standings, I know I mentioned some of them already, but it goes Houston, Memphis, Tulane, Cincinnati, Temple, Wichita, UCF, USF, East Carolina, SMU, and then a big, 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 big gap, and then us sitting there at the bottom by ourselves by a lot. Catching up on some of the games that happened recently. Wednesday, going back to there, Houston beat Tulane. Mentioned Tulane, the third place team in the American right now. Houston beat them by 30. No big deal. Went into, it was at Houston. Just an absolute dominant performance from them, as has been the case recently. South Florida beat UCF in Orlando by 7 to complete the season sweep. of the Knights. Mentioned that already. Love that, though. Would always prefer USF winning that game over Central Florida. Pretty cool. Thursday, the 23rd, the next day, Memphis beat Wichita by 5 in Wichita. Great game. I actually watched most of this game. Both teams looked really good. Wichita's sitting there at 6th in the league right now, and Memphis is sitting there at 2nd, and it looks like a battle of two of the top teams in the league. Wichita actually played a really good game. That home environment is always, always on fire, and it was for this one for sure. I know people aren't happy with Isaac Brown. If I were a fan, I wouldn't be happy with Isaac Brown either. But that was a fun game. They played well. Unfortunately, lost to Memphis, but it was a good one. Last two on my list that were notable. Memphis beat Cincinnati by 3 at home in Memphis. Cincy almost came back after being down by like 20 earlier in this game. Memphis held them off, still won it. So Memphis gets a nice win there. And then back to Wichita, beat Tulane by 7 in New Orleans. That was just a couple days ago on Sunday. So a couple good ones, but none too surprising in that stretch. But wanted to call out some of the ones that I thought were the biggest in the league. Okay, let's close it out. We've got one more main topic here, and Matt mentioned it at the top of the show. It is football and the coaching staff. What the hell's going on? I don't. it's weird. So one of the guys we already know about Guerrieri. I can't remember if we talked about him leaving on our last episode that was like 3 weeks ago. He probably left about that time, like right around our last episode, but I can't remember if we talked about it on the show, but he left for Indiana, which is, Kevin Wilson's got the relationship there. I think Guerrieri coached with him there or something at some point. So he has a relationship with the school. But our DC, leaves for another school before ever coaching a game here. Huge bummer. Then that was the first shoe to drop. The other one just happened this past week. And that is, unfortunately, the guy we were jokingly/not really jokingly the most excited about on this staff, which was Ricky Brown, who was the special teams coach. And we were so excited about him because forever, up until maybe the last season of Philip Montgomery, we didn't have anybody on the staff with special teams in their title and no one really responsible for that side of the ball. And we finally got one under Kevin Wilson here. And now he's gone. Left for Navy. An intra-conference foe. So Navy's taking our guy and going to join Brian Newberry and the new staff over there, which is weird. I don't really know what to think or make of these situations. Like, I understand Guerrieri a little more. Yeah, it's a shitty move. You leave before ever coaching here. But, like, you're going to a Power 5 school. If you get the opportunity, like, if that was me in the situation, I might do the same thing. Like, I'm going to make way more money, I'm sure, at Indiana. It sucks for the current school. It's hard to justify that, but at least there's an argument for it. Ricky Brown going to a school in the same league, maybe he went to Navy. Like, that would make it more reasonable for me. But it's the same league. I can't imagine he's going to make much more. I think he's also coaching linebackers. Maybe that's what he wanted to do or something. It is weird, man. My main question was, like, I don't know how these work. Did nobody actually sign a contract first? Was it just like a buddy's agreement? Just like, hey, come on over to Tulsa and coach on my staff and we'll figure out the details later. And then before they figured out the details later, half the staff left. I don't know. It's weird. I don't really know what to think. What do you think about this whole situation? And do you have any knowledge or inclination of how and why this stuff happens?
I mean, so it's the Manny Diaz special, right?
Yeah.
Signs with Temple worse. And then immediately... Yeah. Bounces like what, six, 3 days?
Yeah, it was a week or two.
Super
I think.
Short bounces. Yeah, so like I agree. Can kind of see Guerrieri side of it. Ricky Brown. I'm currently on his Wikipedia page, seeing he played at Boston College. I'm not seeing anything. His Wikipedia also says he still coaches at Tulsa.
Bring him back.
So there's literally control F. There's nothing about Navy on his Wikipedia page. So yeah, weird. And I think there's been no comment or word or anything from Tulsa or Wilson that I've seen on Twitter or anything. And so I'm just
wow. Like, is the only story we got was from Kelly Hines, I suppose, in the Tulsa world.
I'm pretty confident. Like, I'll go. Yeah. So wow. I'm looking on their website now. Cause I feel like, that's not news that you really want to.
Yeah. Push. Tulsa football's not going to tweet out, hey, guess what?
Yeah. Our coaches are leaving.
Yeah.
So you look at Latest news is Denarik Prince in the combine this week. Oklahoma, Washington, and yeah, so it's just football schedule stuff. There's nothing about any of these from the university.
Man, bizarre. So what do you think it is? Do you think nobody signed a contract? I mean, that must have been the case, right? Otherwise, maybe we got a huge buyout like from Navy and Indiana, but why would they do that this late in the year? It doesn't make sense to me. I don't know how this stuff works.
Yeah, so Navy is not going to give us a buyout. I can't imagine for like a defensive assistant coach.
Yeah.
And then like my thought is like, why would you buy out Guerrieri? Like, I mean, we talked about our hesitations with him in the first place. And so I'm just like, from Indiana's perspective, I'm just like, why?
And he's co-DC too. So he like, that's the weirder situation. He's leaving. He's a full DC here. He's got nobody else competing with him or sharing responsibility. Maybe he wants to share it. I don't know. That to me, I would want to run the show. Maybe he's looking forward to being able to pawn off some of the responsibility. Or maybe he just heard us talk bad about him on the show and was like, I'm dipping out of here, man. These guys don't even like me.
Yeah, man. If we had that influence, that would be, Haith would have been gone sooner. I'll say that. I feel like there's got to be something else. Whether or not we ever hear what that is, you know, up in the air, but there's
kind of concerns me. Like, maybe this is what you're alluding to, but are you concerned at all of like, these guys got here, started watching Kevin Wilson run the show and were like, I don't want to be in this situation anymore. Right. That's the worst case scenario. Do you think that's a possibility?
I don't think that would be the case because of their history with him. Like it's like it's new, I would say.
Yep, good call.
I wonder if there's just
both just for context, if you weren't aware, I'm pretty sure I know Guerrieri. I'm pretty sure Brown also have actively coached with this guy, like with Kevin Wilson on the same staff. So none of them are new to him. Yep. So that's what Matt's getting at.
Brown was the Ohio State quarterback coach. No, quality control. Okay, that makes way more sense. I was like, why is he a quarterback going defensive? he was on Ohio State staff in 21. Confirmed connection. So it's not like that shouldn't have been new. The only is like, is there something about Tulsa that they weren't aware of? Or is there something else, you know, like maybe there's a personal reason, you know, like there's like, oh, family stuff. And so staying in Indiana or staying on the East Coast or something like that. I don't know. It's just weird. And I don't know who to ask.
It's weird, man. The thing is like, now what do we do? You know, like most competent coaches at this point will already be in a job and like getting ready for spring ball. Like spring ball is around the corner here, you know? And so the only thing I could think of when I thought of that question is like, do we go to the FCS? We just like pay somebody way more and they'll bail this late in the season or something. FCS probably is going on right now. I don't remember when that season starts. So like maybe that's a complication. It's not good, especially for like, you know, as much as we love having a special teams coach, replacing a special teams coach is probably not as big of a deal. Replacing your defensive coordinator this late in the cycle is bad. Maybe we'll pull a rabbit out of a hat here and figure something out that is awesome, but like Guerrieri, the first option I didn't think was awesome, and now we've got to go figure out some second place guy, and of the second place guys, who's even willing to leave this late in the season or in the cycle here? So it's not good. I don't feel good about the DC spot. I don't. Maybe I'll be surprised, but it's concerning.
Well, and so like talking on FCS. So FCS, they only did spring that one, like in the COVID. Normally they're in the fall as well, so they're like their season hasn't started in the same, I mean, as much as ours has. But just like looking at that, I'm like, well, that's what Mike Gundy did, right? He hired Brian Nardo from like Gannon University as their new defensive coordinator.
You're not inspiring confidence in me, Matt.
I know, but it's like, yeah, well, normally I'd be like, oh, Mike Gundy did this. Defensive coordinators are like pretty good at Oklahoma State. But I mean, there's like a lot that's kind of going on over there.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, well, what if we pull the ultimate, like, final poll? And, like, who... what was his name? Their defensive coordinator last year, Derek Mason. What if that's the final piece of, like, Wilson's strategy to take players from OSU, is to take that? It's not going to happen. I'm just talking out of my, like, ridiculous, but I'm just like, what if?
But, did you see on Twitter, not Captain Kane's suggestion for DC?
Joe Gillespie? No, I didn't see that. That's my guess.
That would be incredible. No, it was just going to throw this out there and see what happens. ... Enter. New Tulsa DC, Todd Graham.
As DC, man.
Yeah.
What a
recently
lot,
like, removed from the Hawaii job. Sitting there. He's available.
Can you imagine, like, Kevin Wilson, you know, with his history and just, like, how intense he is and is known to be as a coach, and then you throw Todd Graham on it, who's just an asshole? Like, that would be, I feel like, just a disastrous combo between the two.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, he's been a DC. I'm on his Wikipedia page. He's been a DC before. He was a DC for some high schools. He was co-DC for West Virginia. He was partly DC for us back in the day, and then was a head coach ever since from there. So he's got a defensive background. Oh, my. If that actually happened, I know it's a joke tweet, but, like, yeah. Holy shit, man. That would be crazy.
I don't know if I could keep doing the podcast if we brought him back after the last 3 years.
Why? What do you mean?
Just with, like, his fallout with Hawaii and everything that came out of that, like...
Yeah.
I just wouldn't want to deal with him.
It would be a mess. It would be a bad idea. It was just very funny to see the suggestion. It's like, yeah, I mean, he was a DC. He has history with Tulsa. He is available. He's not on a team right now. But that is a bad choice. We should not do that.
Yeah. I kind of want to shoot, like, either Kelly or McFarland and just be like, you know anything? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm sure they probably have some instincts. I don't know.
Can we get Barry?
It's weird, man. Go get Barry Odom. He's at UNLV, and yeah, that's weird. I think they're actually dealing with, I think a player on their team just died or something, so they're dealing with a bad situation.
That sucks.
Yeah, but anyway, gonna be weird. I mean, they have to make a move, like, now, like, soon, in the next week. Like, we're running out of time here. I'm pretty sure the spring game is going to be, it must be later than normal because we don't have a staff, and Kevin Wilson started so late. So I think I saw or heard Kelly Hines say that it's, like, scheduled towards the end of March right now or something. So, I mean, yeah, that's right around the freaking tomorrow is March. So, like, we're running out of time. So we'll see, man. It's going to be bizarre. I don't know what to expect.
Yeah. On the flip side, like, all my hopes and dreams are tied into this team's offense anyways.
Yeah, so,
like,
true.
You know, maybe we're just like, we don't really need a defensive coordinator. We'll just put up 80 points and see what happens, you know?
Yep. Yep.
So that's
be that fine with that, honestly. True. Okay. Last thing on the, or no, never mind. I got one more thing on the agenda after this one. Well, last main thing on the agenda, 2023 football schedule. It is out. It's been out for a week or so. Just wanted to run through some of the high level stuff from that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 home games. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 road games. So a nice even split there. Opening up the year, as we know, a little tough. It's going to be an FCS team first. I think that's Incarnate Word. I don't remember that logo off the top of my head. That doesn't look like Incarnate Word. I can't remember who that is.
We don't play Incarnate Word. That would be a terrible FCS team to play.
Why can I not remember who the hell who that is? Let me look up the schedule.
It's Iowa, and some Iowa school, isn't it?
It's not ringing a bell for me. You might be right. UAPB, Arkansas Pine Bluff. There we go. So the Golden Lions. We got two golden teams going at each other week one. So we open up at home against UAPB, go on the road against Washington. Then we get home against Oklahoma. That's going to be a hell of a game. Then on the road against Northern Illinois, played Northern Illinois this past season. So getting them for the second year in a row. Home versus Temple, on the road, Florida Atlantic. We're getting into AAC 2.0 season now. On the road, Florida Atlantic. Home versus Rice, on the road, SMU, home versus Charlotte, on the road, Tulane, home versus North Texas, on the road, East Carolina to end the year. That is maybe the easiest home schedule I've ever seen for Tulsa football. Let me just read the home teams for you again. All the home teams are bad, straight up bad. I mean, what, North Texas was pretty good last year, and Rice had some flashes. But anyway, UAPB home to start the year. Oklahoma going to be good. We, you know, whatever. They weren't that great this past season. It's OU. They're going to be good. So that's the tough one. Then look at this. The rest of these home games, we got home versus Temple, who was the bottom of the league this past year. Home versus Rice, who was middling to bad in Conference USA. Home versus Charlotte, who I think came in last in Conference USA or second to last. And then home versus North Texas, who made a bowl game and then fired their coach. So what a weird situation. And Charlotte just got a new head coach. Temple has got a second-year head coach. It is, I mean, that is maybe the easiest home schedule you could possibly ask for. Road schedule is tougher. We get SMU on the road. We get Tulane on the road. Obviously, Tulane's going to be a juggernaut probably again next year. East Carolina finally loses Holton Ahlers, but they'll still be decent, I'm sure. Florida Atlantic is an okay team, and they're the ones that are bringing in Tom Herman, so that'll be exciting. Northern Illinois, not that great. And then Washington, going to be a solid team. So, man, it's like, it's pretty easy. We're pretty much replacing UCF, Cincinnati, and Houston with Florida Atlantic, Rice, and Charlotte. It's like, this is the best possible scenario here. We do have to play Tulane and SMU. As we mentioned, they're both good, but we get them in there on the road, so it's going to make it tougher. So those will be tough ones. But there's enough here, Matt, I think, to at least make a bowl in year one for Kevin Wilson. I think that should be the minimum. It's first year. There's always uncertainty with year one for a head coach, and especially he started late, and now the staff has taken some setbacks here we just talked about. But with the guys returning on offense and the staff that's in place for offense, I mean, it's bad, I think, if they don't make a bowl game. I think that's a bad sign, because there are some very winnable games on that schedule.
Yeah, I agree. I would say a bowl game is kind of the floor with – that was my initial reaction, is like, yeah, you have to go bowling, because you – like, you're looking at 5 wins potentially just on the – just on the home games. You know, and even Oklahoma, like, this is not the Oklahoma of, you know, Baker Mayfield or Jalen Hurts or Kyler Murray. Like, mm-hmm. You know, this is a different Oklahoma team. So it's like, yeah, it's going to be it's kind of a road game, unfortunately, for us, from my experience. But like, you're looking at 5 wins probably on the home at a minimum. Like, yeah, my gut is telling me 8 wins next year based on this schedule.
Wouldn't be surprised. And that would be nice. Like, that would be, man, that would be awesome. Get back to 8. That'd be sweet. Yeah, take that in a heartbeat.
I think if we don't go bowling, like, we've talked about it, I think, you know, so much. That's not the expectation with Kevin Wilson, is that this is going to be a rebuild, like a slow rebuild to become a good team. Like, the expectation is that, you know, we are going to be able to take that step above this past season, which was a disappointment, and get back to, you know, consistent bowling.
Agreed. I'm with you. I feel like 8 is a good number to stick at, and that should be the one we are hoping for. And you know, if you do better than that, cherry on top, eight I feel like is that would be solid. No one's going to be disappointed with 8 wins, especially after the last several years. 6, I feel like people will still be relatively happy with going bowling. There'll be some disappointment that it was only 6. You don't make a bowl, that sucks. There are not enough good teams on here to not make a bowl, even though it's year one. So that's the bar. I agree. Cool. Okay. Last thing, at least from me, and then we can, Matt, if you have other stuff, obviously. But last thing from me, Dane Evans, after 4 years in Hamilton with mixed results, made it to the Grey Cup back in 2019 when he took over the starting job. Kind of lost that starting job again the next year to Jeremiah Masoli, but then got it, won it outright. Masoli got traded 2022. Dane Evans was the guy, unquestioned leader of that team. And unfortunately, 2022 was not great statistically for him. The team was not that good. He went 16 touchdowns for 16 interceptions. He wasn't horrible, you know, per se, but after 3 years of clawing and fighting to get that starting job, And then he finally earns it. It was disappointing, I think, for him probably as well. But then for me, just pulling for, you know, I was so psyched that Masoli got traded and he won it. And then it didn't go the way that I was hoping it was going to go. And so Hamilton trades him. So he's no longer a Hamilton Tiger Cat, which means our aforementioned episode with Dane Evans called the Hamilton Tiger Cast is not quite as relevant as it was way back when. So he's out of Hamilton. He got traded to BC, British Columbia. He's on the BC Lions. No idea who else is on that team. Don't even know if they're any good. I do feel like I remember them being good recently just from random games I've watched and, you know, the CFL or what's the ESPN equivalent of it's CFN, right?
CSN.
Yeah.
Yeah. Canadian Sports Network.
Yes. Thank you. That, you know, just like ESPN, they'll show graphics of the standings and whatever. I feel like I always see BC near the top of that. So hoping he landed on a pretty solid team. I don't know if he's the unquestioned starter getting transferred over there or if he's more of an insurance like backup guy. But just wanted to call that out. He recently, just in the past day or two, got moved. So that's been finalized. So he's no longer in Hamilton, off to BC for our guy, Dane Evans. Hoping for the best for him. I want him to be a starter somewhere. I want him to do best he possibly can, obviously. And you got to be better than 16 touchdowns and 16 interceptions. I know he knows that too. And so that was a disappointing end to his tenure there, and hoping the best for him going forward.
Yeah, I think the thing that I will hate and the biggest what if for me is that 21 Grey Cup run that he made, and then he gets hurt, you know, in the first couple drives.
That was 19 when they made it to the Grey Cup, right?
They made it twice. Yeah, 19 is the one where he came in kind of as relief and then took them to the Grey Cup. And then 21, he came over, or he like won the job at some point and took them to the Grey Cup and then got hurt in the final.
It must have been late. Like, his stats in 21 are so much lower. So yeah, it must have been late in the season. That
he came over. I think that's what won him the 22 job, is like his push there. Okay. They lost to the Bombers both times, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
That was the night you recorded the Old Dominion episode.
Wow.
Because we were watching the game at your house. yeah, well, and I'm looking, so British Columbia was second in the West last year behind the aforementioned Blue Bombers. I'm looking at this press release from yesterday, where they're saying veteran quarterback Dominique Davis thrilled to work with a core group of teammates. So it sounds like it's not just Evans. They've got another quarterback on the roster at least.
Yep. Well, figured they would. I just didn't know if it was like, who was going to, was there a de facto starter already, or was he coming in as the guy?
Let's see. Adams Jr. leading the charge. The additions of both Evans and Davis no doubt give the Lions perhaps the best veteran-laden quarterback. So it sounds like Adams Jr. is the guy in the room.
Gotcha. All right. So another battle in store for Dane Evans, trying to take it over once again. Hoping the best for him. Hopefully he gets it. Love that guy. He's, man, just his time at Tulsa was like core time for me at TU. He lit it up there, and then watching him at Hamilton was awesome. So definitely want him to find something.
Yeah, there's like a question on Twitter about like who is the best. I think it was a Big Game Boomer. It was like, who is the best player from this century at your school? Or maybe not century. Let's say decade. So like 2010s.
I think it was century. I think it was like 21st century.
Okay. And it's like, yeah, I think Dane Evans has I think the one they had was Zaven Collins, who I think you would argue has had the most prolific career out of anybody. Well, now I'm trying to think, when did Clay go to TU?
Like 2012, 2010, something like that.
Okay. Cause you talk about longevity in the NFL.
Yeah.
Charles Clay is like up there. But yeah, like Dane Evans, I think is up there for, he's in the running. He's in the conversation for, you know, best TU player.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he was definitely my favorite one to watch in our short, you know, 4-year stretch there. So agreed, you know, in terms of like star power, attitude around the team when he was there, his general competitiveness, like he was extremely fun to watch. Zaven Collins, you know, he's got more of the high level, you know, stuff. And that's why he made it to the NFL, and Dayton didn't necessarily. But just in terms of, you know, offensive players, they're just you're drawn to them more, and especially the quarterback spot, right? And so he's got the advantage there for sure. Okay, anything else, or are you ready to call it here?
I think I am ready to call it.
All right. Thank you, everybody, then, for listening to our show. Make sure, if you're not already, follow the show, subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Drop us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. That would be super nice. Really does help. If you want to support us or would like to, you can do that by going to our website at thegoldenhurricast.com/support. You'll find several different ways you could help us out over there. And finally, you can find us on Twitter at @GoldenHurricast, although I have been playing around with Mastodon more recently, and I'm not as opposed to it as I was. Not that I'm, the sports community is not over there. It's mostly just tech people. So maybe once the sports people move over there, if and when that happens, we will at least create an account. But for now, you can definitely still find us on Twitter at @GoldenHurricast, or you can send us an email to thegoldenhurricast@gmail.com. Thanks again, everybody, for listening, and we will talk to you next week to do some conference tournament preview.
Stay golden.